I call the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee to order. Good afternoon and happy Pi Day. We do have a quorum present. So I just want to set the stage for today. We are going to hear two bills today that need to travel to other committees. Senator Murphy's bill will be re-referred to state and local government, and Senator Zhang's bill will go to judiciary, and that needs to also go to labor. We also need to adjourn by 1:30 today, so I'm going to do my best to keep us on track. I will ask testifiers to limit their testimony to 2 minutes and would ask members to please keep your questions and comments tailored to what is within our jurisdiction. And so with that, we will begin with Senator Murphy's Senate File 4678. Senator Murphy. When you are ready, you may proceed. Senator Murphy.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I am delighted to join you today as the author of Senate File 4678, which is legislation working to address a problem that we have discovered in the district I represent in St. Paul, in District 64, dealing with a condominium that represents deeply affordable housing for a number of people who live at the Wilder condominiums in St. Paul. So we're here today with a specific problem, but I think what's important for the committee is that what we're encountering in this instance in St. Paul, we believe is the front edge of what we will continue to see when we think about housing stock and naturally occurring affordable housing and our need to address not only the conditions under which we are creating new affordable housing, but the important work we can do to make sure that the housing stock that we have in place is habitable, and is doing its job so that people who have lived in a place for a long time, as many of the residents at Wilder have a place that they call home, that they don't have to leave, that creates a new housing problem for that community. I believe that what we are starting today here is a conversation about the things that we need to do going forward to make sure that everybody has a safe place to call home. And that's why we're here. I am happy to be joined by a couple of testifiers. I also have an author's amendment, Madam Chair, and if it pleases the committee, I'd like to move that author's amendment and get the bill into the shape that we would like it.
Very good. Senator Pa will move the A1 amendment, which is an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes and the amendment is adopted, so the bill is in the form in which you would like it heard. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and if it's okay with the committee, I would like to turn to my testifiers.
Very good. We will hear first from Howard Orenstein. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you mentioned, my name is Howard Orenstein. I used to be a state representative for the surrounding area for the Wilder Project, and a long time ago, my hair wasn't gray then, but in the late 80s and early 90s. When I moved back to the area last year, I found out about the really tough problem that was happening in this neighborhood, and where I live now is right next to the high-rise in question. And so I offered to help as a volunteer using my experience. So I'm just here as a volunteer and as a neighbor. The building itself, let me just tell you quickly about the building. It's a senior high-rise, which meets the HUD standards for senior age. It was constructed in the late 1970s. By the association bylaws, 25% of the units have to be sold to people meeting HUD low-income guidelines. But as time has passed, the building has gotten poorer by demographics. We conducted a demographic survey of the residents last month, and there was a very strong response rate. The conclusion was that 94% of the people who live there meet the HUD low-income guidelines, not the 25% originally, but 94% now. And most of those 94% are in the lower two tiers of the HUD income guidelines. So the building is deeply affordable, as Senator Murphy said. The units right now are selling for between $60,000 and $125,000. One just sold this week for $60,000. That's good and bad. It's good because it's affordable for people who can move in, but it's really tough when you have a major capital repair project like the one the building is facing, which is why we're here today. There's a $6.5 million project to replace the aging windows. And it's just not possible for the people who are living there and who have such low incomes to be able to afford that kind of a project. So was that bell for my time expiring?
If you could conclude your thoughts, yes.
Okay. I also wanted to say that 62% of the people in the building have Social Security as their primary source of income. 39% report that they're disabled. So we're asking for help for this low-income population. And the amount being requested by Senator Murphy is half the cost of the project. We would like a partnership where the residents would pay for half, and we would get assistance for the other half. And we have been to the state, the city, and the federal government for existing programs, and we were told, unfortunately, not that our cause wasn't worthy, but that we don't meet any of the other programs. So that's why we're here under these circumstances.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Janet Warwick, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you very much. My name is Janet Warwick. I greet all of you on behalf of the Wilder Park community, and I'm happy to be here to share our story with you today. My name is Janet Warwick. I've lived at the Wilder Park Senior High Rise since 2016, and I was elected to be the president of the Homeowners Association. Thank you, Senator Murphy, for stepping up to us when we've exhausted all efforts to find assistance from existing housing programs. Our building is old, and we need to complete a major life cycle repair of the windows. After value engineering to trim costs wherever possible, the cost of the project was reduced to $6.5 million. We cannot delay on this project, as our engineers have told us that the increase in cost year to year is expected to be 10%. The cost of the project is simply way beyond the means of our low-income residents. As Howard mentioned, our demographic survey indicates that 94% of our residents meet the HUD low-income guidelines, with most of those in the lower two tiers. Because our residents are old and many are disabled, I am here representing them and wanted to relay several of their stories, which are representative of many owners. Lisa is a widowed Russian immigrant woman, 86 years old, and very hard of hearing. She worked while in the U.S. as a preschool instructor. She purchased her unit outright 6 years ago when her husband was hospitalized in order that she would be able to provide him and her with a ground floor unit with plenty of room for his wheelchair. However, he was never able to join her, but rather moved to assisted living and then into nursing care. She paid as much of his costs as she could during the 5 years before his death. The county stepped in to pay the bills when she could no longer do so. But when she dies, the funds owed will be taken from her estate. Now she lives on $1,385 a month from Social Security and pays about $800 a month in monthly dues. This is without respect to the coming additional special assessments for the windows. She has little left with which to pay her assessment, and she says she doesn't know what she will do. She says, I worked all my life and did everything right, and now I stay up many nights working how to pay. Lisa's cost for a special assessment for a $6.5 million windows project would be $33,475. Helen is a widowed woman, age 93. She and her husband moved to the building about 3 years ago. His health declined, and Helen nursed him for as long as she could. He has since passed away. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't want to sell her unit and move at her age, but she can't afford to pay the estimated assessment of over $40,000 or at age 93, participate in an association loan with payments of over $200 a month for 25 years. Heidi is another female owner in her 80s. She has a high mortgage and
Ms.
took
Warwick,
out...
if you could conclude your thoughts.
Okay.
Thank
all
you.
All right. I'll eliminate the other two stories, but we have more. The stories are repeated throughout the building as one goes from door to door, floor to floor. The affordable housing development is their home, our home, my home. Owners don't want to move at their ages, and they have no other options of other places where they can go and have it affordable. Our residents are looking to you for help. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy, any other comments?
Madam Chair and members, thank you so much for giving this bill a hearing. I know that the committee time is precious right now. The people that I'm working with, former representative, Mr. Orenstein, Janet, and others, have worked now for the greater part of a year looking for a solution. And when they approached me about this legislation, we worked together with the City of St. Paul, with Betty McCollum's office, with Tina Smith's office. We have worked with people who work in the legislature to try and find a solution to make sure the people that live in this high-rise are able to remain in their homes, because losing their homes would put them in a more difficult financial position, which brings me back to the point about naturally occurring affordable housing and the value of it in our communities across the state of Minnesota. I would love to believe that this is the only experience, this is the only community that's experiencing this, but I don't believe that is the case. We know that the people who live in this condominium are facing some health issues if the windows are not replaced. So it is an urgent issue for the community, both in terms of their ability to live there, to live there safely, and to know that the place that they call home remains theirs. So we ask for your strong consideration of this as we move forward through the rest of this session.
Thank you. Members, discussion. We'll start with Senator Dreheim.
Thanks for picking me, Chair. And thank you. Compelling story. It sounds like we definitely need to help figure out a solution for this. And I just had a couple questions about the makeup of the association. I assume it's a condo association with an HOA. Is that correct?
Senator Murphy or Mr. Orenstein?
Madam Chair and Senator, yes, that's correct.
Senator Dreheim?
Thank you. And I thought I heard that dues are about $800 a unit. Is that correct?
Mr. Orenstein? Or Ms. Warwick?
Thank you. It varies quite a lot. We've got an unusual way of spreading the cost of our dues around, and so it varies. There could be $800 is probably kind of middle of the road. There's some that are substantially lower. There's also some that are closer to $1,000. So it varies quite a lot.
Senator Dreheim?
Thank you. So that the variance in the dues, is that based off of unit size or income, or how is that set up?
Ms. Warwick?
I wish that were an easy question to answer, but we are left with the structure that was set up for us by the Wilder Park Foundation together with the City of St. Paul. And the basis for how much any owner pays for his or her share of the dues is based on the original sales price of the unit that they currently live in. It has nothing to do with square footage or the income level of anybody. It has to do with the original sales price of the unit back in 1978 or 79.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. Intriguing. I appreciate the knowledge that the testifiers have. And then my last question would be then, is there a management company on site that runs it, or is it 100% run by the residents?
Ms. Warwick?
We have a management company on board, and there are 230 units in the tower, so it would be very difficult to run the operation that we have there without professional an administrator who has the background and support from an association management company.
Senator Graham.
Thank you. I'll hold off on the rest. Thanks.
Senator Pa.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. I want to first thank Senator Murphy for bringing on this bill to our housing committee, and I want to thank the testifiers. I hear from seniors in our communities every day talking about their ability to be able to live in their communities and in their home. And I believe that we do need to do more in supporting our seniors to be able to live in their home, and especially making sure that it's a safe home, and that when there are these critical needs in renovation and updates to their places, that's able to be done. Because again, oftentimes when financial challenges are an issue, those things don't get done. And that means that they're not living in a safe environment. And so I want to thank you for bringing this. This is something I truly support. And not only that, but there's so many of these projects throughout our state of Minnesota that also needs our investment in. So thank you for coming before us.
Thank you.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Murphy, and to the testifiers. Yeah, this is, it's a hard issue because there are good people on fixed incomes where costs are increasing dramatically above what people are able to afford. Just a couple questions here, maybe the first for Senator Murphy. So when I'm looking at the bill here, and I understand that the discussion has been this one project, but I believe the bill is allocating a certain amount directly to this project, but there's the higher dollar amount is, it's not just to this project, is that correct?
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Lucero, this is for this project.
Senator Lucero.
Okay, I thought that it was above and beyond, so I appreciate that clarification. So then the next question I would have, why have all this extra criteria in here if it's specifically to this project, or did your amendment, Alpha's amendment, delete that criteria? And the criteria I'm referring to is, it gives a, beginning on line 1.14, it lists 1, 2, 3 separate criteria whereby the building must meet in order to qualify for these funds. So if it's just for this project, why is this criteria listed and then just have a direct appropriation?
Senator Murphy or Ms. Dornstein?
Madam Chair and Senator Lucero, good question. So the bill has two sections, and you're looking at both of the sections. So I'll explain the difference between the two sections. The second section, which is maybe the easiest place to start, is the direct appropriation for this project. That's section two. Section one amends the Housing Redevelopment Authority statutes that local governments have HRAs. And we were told by the city of St. Paul that we didn't qualify for assistance under their existing programs. But our city council member is interested in helping us with the financing of the remainder of this project if they get more authority to do so. So section one of the bill is simply an enabling section that would be added to the HRA statutes to allow the city of St. Paul to help with some lower interest financing if they choose to do so.
Senator Lucero.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so it's my understanding that there is more than just the direct appropriation to this bill, if I understand that, obviously. There is the $5 million that I see on line 1.14, and then the direct appropriation, as I see in the Office Amendment on line 1.13 of 3.2. Right, so there's obviously a delta there, 1.7. $5 million, right? I just want to make sure I'm understanding correctly.
Okay. Senator Lucero, yeah. If I could, I wonder if we could turn to council.
Perfect.
Madam Chair and members, the section one of the bill does not appropriate any money. It's just some statutory language that, like the witness said, makes them eligible to work with the St. Paul Housing Authority, and just says would make this project fall within these classifications. So section one does not appropriate any money. It just makes them eligible with the St. Paul Housing Authority. Section two of the bill, which has been replaced now in the amendment, appropriates $3.25 million for the project separately. reason why these two sections are in the same bill is they apply to the same project, but they're dealing with two different things.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. I'll also just note that Section 1 is the section that needs to go to state local government and be heard there. Senator Lucero.
Got it. I appreciate that. Thank you. So, appreciate that clarification. So then the other question I would have is when it comes to repair, and let's see, where was that? Line 1.18. It has it, and this would be for Senator Murphy, I suppose. When it says the asset category of assets has been repaired or replaced, it doesn't specify what repair is. And in my mind, I'm just thinking, I mean, repair can be anything from super small to a much larger repair. It could be the repair of a parking lot. It could be the repair of a retaining wall. It could be the repair of a roof, right? Or it could be something as small as the repair of a kitchen sink. And so is there anything that, just to help me clarify, the qualification requirements as the verbiage is written?
Senator Murphy.
You could address this question by deleting those two.
And Madam Chair, as I'm just for clarification, as they're looking at that, it says that a project would not qualify for these funds if it had been repaired within the last 25 years. So a strict reading of the language would mean if something as small as a kitchen sink was repaired in the last 25 years, it wouldn't qualify. I just want to see if I'm reading that correctly.
Senator Murphy or Mr. Ornstein, when you are ready.
Madam Chair, we appreciate Senator Lucero's argument. And if someone on the committee was willing to move an oral amendment on line 1.18, deleting the words repaired or, it could put the bill into the shape that I believe we intend and answer Senator Lucero's question.
Senator Lucero?
Madam Chair, let's not do the oral amendment. I mean, I'm not going to offer that. If somebody else wants to, they could. But the reason I don't want to just delete that, because this is a list of criteria, and there might be some other, when you start pulling on that, there might be some other unintended consequences. So I'll just bring that to your attention, leave that to you as this goes forward. But if you just strike the words repair and replace, you still have a bunch of other stuff underlying three that may or may not make sense anymore. So again, just drawing that to your attention. And then I guess lastly, I had the other sheet here. As I look at the handout that was included in our packet, I was reading some of the history here, and it said about the units. So this is for window replacement, as we also heard with the testimony. About how many units or how many windows are there in a typical unit?
Ms. Warwick.
Thank you for that question. The number of windows vary from unit to unit, and if that doesn't have anything to do with the cost that's borne by the owner of that unit in the assessment that will be levied. Altogether, there are around 630 windows that will be replaced. There are some different formats for the windows. Some of them are larger, some are smaller. In the unit that I'm in, I have two larger windows and one smaller window that will be replaced. And in some of the other units, there's slightly different formats, but I would say 2 to 3 to 4 large windows in any given unit.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just finish with this then. I know we've heard other bills, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, a bill, a very similar situation, not repairs looking to require, but it was those on fixed incomes with rents that are increasing. This is not rent here, but this is cost. It's a similar situation in terms of people that were incurring a hardship. And what that bill was seeking to do, if I remember correctly, it was limiting the rent increase to the COLA increase minus 1%. So has there been consideration, Madam Chair, and to the bill author maybe, instead of this, would it be a solution to just limit the assessment cost to the cost of COLA minus 1%? In other words, using the same pattern of thought process in that other arena and applying it to this arena to limit the cost of those that are on fixed incomes.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair and Senator Lucero, perhaps in the same way that you suggested that we consider your advice to us and not do the oral amendment, I would like to consider what you were suggesting. It is a new formula for me, one that's familiar to you, but I would like to consider it rather than respond right now so I can think about it a little bit.
Senator Lucero.
That is a very fair answer. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Murphy.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Senator Lucero.
And Pi Day.
Other questions or discussion, members? And again, just a reminder, this bill will go to state and local government where Section 1 is in the jurisdiction of that committee, so work on that language.
Chair Bolden.
Senator Drahan.
Can I just make one more comment
before
we wrap up? The people that live in this building are obviously in a tough spot. They cannot afford the cost of the repairs, which I think is too high, but that's a whole different story. But I am concerned that the structure of the association isn't sound. And $184,000 a year in HOA fees, and we have no extra money to keep the building up. Are we going to continually run into this type of problem? And how I came up with that number of members is I took the 230 units times the average of approximately 800. So I think there's a bigger issue here. I think, if there is a way to fix the association, but I understand people on fixed income have zero extra money. They can't afford to raise any funds for the repairs. I understand that. I get that. And that's why I'm always sensitive on property taxes and raising property taxes, because I've had dozens of people over the years tell me they have to move out of their home because they can't afford the property taxes. And this is kind of the same situation. So I appreciate it. I thank you for doing what you're doing. But I think we need to look at the structure of the 230 units to make sure we're not falling into the same problem time and time again. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Drahan.
Thank you, Senator Murphy, for bringing this bill. Clearly, this is a significant issue for the people in these units and wanting to be sure that they can stay in their homes. And as you mentioned, I think this is not the only place where this is an issue currently or will be in the future. So any closing comments to your bill?
I want to say again, thank you very much, given where we are in the session. It means a lot to me that we're hearing this bill, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
All right. Senator Pa, would you like to make a motion that Senate File 4678, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government?
Thank you, Chair Bolden. I would like to make that motion.
All right. Members, all in favor of Senator Pa's motion, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion is adopted, and your bill is on its way.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members.
Next, we will move to Senator Zhang's bill, Senate File 4593. Senator Zhang, when you are ready, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair, members. And I also have A1 amendment that would put the bill in the shape that we would intend.
Very good. Senator Zhang would move the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes and the amendment is adopted. Senator Zhang, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair, members. As you all know, Minnesota faces a substantial shortage of affordable housing. And to address this, this committee and the state legislature have been stepping up to finance new affordable housing projects through direct grants and tax incentive programs. Unfortunately, much of this public money is channeled to problem contractors that build new housing projects on the backs of vulnerable workers. Members, there have been documented widespread use of irresponsible contractors on TIF and LIHTC, or low-income housing tax credit funded affordable housing projects, two major sources of public housing financing. Recently, research from the North Star Policy Action, as you should have a copy of the report in your packet, and I hope that folks take some time to read it. The report found evidence that since 2016, workers on 25 projects receiving $35 million in LIHTC funding were potentially at risk of exploitation by problem contractors. Further, since 2018, workers in 14 projects that receive approximately $53 million in TIF subsidies were potentially at risk of exploitation by problem contractors. There are problem contractors that consistently show up on publicly subsidized projects despite a pattern of worker abuse. Government investigations have found that one of these contractors deprived workers of more than $126,000 in wages, violated child labor laws, misclassified workers, and submitted false and misleading information during the course of an investigation. We need to address our housing shortages through expanded tax incentives and direct public financing, but we cannot allow public dollars to fund worker exploitation. We can prevent exploitation by implementing robust labor standards on grant and tax incentive programs, and that is what Senate File 4593 provides. The bill provides a solution to the specific issue highlighted by providing family-sustaining wages, transparency, responsible contractor standards, and developer accountability. With this bill, it extends prevailing wage standards to LIHTC projects over 10 units, minimizing the risk of irresponsible conduct on publicly funded projects. Second, the bill increases transparency, providing a contractor standard and developer accountability. In application, it will cover all types of publicly subsidized projects through MHFA, ensuring high road standards across many different loan types. And there's also a disclosure provision in this legislation to ensure that project owners disclose past incidents of wage theft, human trafficking, misclassification, fraud, child labor, and workplace safety violations of contractors. Third, this bill institutes a responsible contractor standard, ensuring that irresponsible contractors that cheat workers or engage in other serious misconduct will not be allowed to work on taxpayer-funded housing projects. And with that, members, this bill is warranted and has been tailored to address the specific problem that unfortunately has been occurring here in Minnesota. And I thank you and the chair for also working and supporting this legislation. And with that, I have my testifiers here, Mr. Franco and Mr. Schweitzer.
Very good. We will turn to testifiers, and I would ask that you try to keep your testimony to 2 minutes or less if you are able. We'll start with Lucas Franco.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Bolden and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lucas Franco. I'm here on behalf of Leuna, Minnesota, and North Dakota, a union of more than 14,000 proud men and women who build and maintain our state's critical infrastructure. As you've heard, there continues to be a widespread shortage of affordable housing. Approximately 10% of Minnesotans are cost-burdened when it comes to housing, and that even affects many of our members who do earn good family-sustaining wages, but yet still have a hard time renting or buying a home. Thankfully, this body and many other units of government have really stepped up to this challenge and have invested significantly to meet these housing needs, and we deeply appreciate that. Yet, as the North Star Policy Action Report revealed, too much of this public money is being channeled to problem contractors that are building new housing on the backs of vulnerable workers. We need to address our housing shortages, but we should not let money flow to problem contractors. This bill will prevent exploitation by implementing robust labor standards on tax and grant programs. I want to briefly highlight some key provisions of the bill. First, the bill expands prevailing wage coverage on LIHTC projects. Prevailing wage policies protect construction workers from wage theft and exploitation and ensure that local contractors aren't put out of business by contractors that don't play by the rules. Additionally, prevailing wage policies achieve these goals with at most minimal impacts on project housing costs. A 2021 peer-reviewed study in the International Journal of Employment Relations disputes the 15% cost impact cited in a letter submitted to this committee and instead found at most modest impacts of prevailing wage on overall project costs. They conclude that those modest impacts were likely explained by the widespread prevalence of illegal and undesirable practices, such as widespread misclassification found in the residential market overall. Second, this bill adds some really important transparency provisions and developer accountability. And with that, I will conclude and urge support for this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, Jake Switzer. Apologies.
Thank you, Chair Bolden, members of the committee. My name is Jake Schweitzer, and I am the Executive Director of North Star Policy Action. We are a think tank that promotes data-driven solutions to help working Minnesotans thrive, and I'm here to speak in favor of Senate File 4593. Senator Zhang did a fantastic job summarizing our research and data in this area, so I won't go too far into it. I will just emphasize that the headline finding in our report is that combined between LIHTC and TIF projects, we found over $84 million in taxpayer subsidies have gone to projects employing contractors with proven or alleged labor violations, $84 million. And when we say things like labor violations, worker exploitation, wage theft, it can sound very general, very 30,000 feet, and this, you know, dehumanizes the actual abuse of workers that is so common in this industry. In our report, we're talking about contractors who have refused to pay their workers their wages and offered them illegal drugs instead, or used child labor, or threatened to fire a woman for reporting sexual assault on the job, or for covering up serious workplace injuries. If you're a contractor who is guilty of abuses like these, you shouldn't be working on publicly subsidized projects. It's as simple as that. And developers need to be held responsible for the contractors that they hire. That's why this bill is so important. Expanding prevailing wage requirements to LIHTC projects will protect workers on those job sites and across the industry from depressed wages. Increasing transparency of who's actually working on these projects will make it harder for bad actors to avoid accountability through layers of subcontractors. And increasing developer accountability will mean project owners can't shirk responsibility for abuses on their projects, all while collecting the profits. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Zhang, any other comments before we move to questions?
Thank you, member. I think this bill is a result of a lot of work, and we look forward to a robust discussion as we're moving towards the different committees coming up.
Very good. Members, Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. I have an amendment I'd like to offer. Before we run out of time, Chair,
Senator Dreheim moves the A2 amendment. Oh. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you.
Oh, Madam Chair, can we get a copy of the amendment? We got it. Thank you. Sorry.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. Members, there's two things that my amendment does, you know, after reading over the bill. And thank you once again to staff for short notice amendment. One, it pushes out the enactment date a year so we can have a little report. So the second half, we ask the Housing Finance Agency to put together a report and report that back to us here in the legislature, to the ranking member and then the chair. But what it's doing is looking at the cost. When we were on tour this summer, touring different projects, we heard from nonprofits about the hard time finding contractors, period, And I don't care if someone works on a union shop or a merit shop. I'm just glad they're working, period. But when we look at how many units we have to create, we need to maximize that return. And we hear a lot of reports of what prevailing wage adds to the cost of a project, you know, 15%. We heard 30 to 50% on the tour. So we need to know so we can make decisions like this bill. And this report would do that. And then the other issue on 1.1, if it delays construction. We heard from many nonprofits about the cost had gone up in their delay on finding contractors to bid the job. By having this provision, we're going to have less contractors out there, less people to do it. I think it will delay projects, so I want to know what that would be. And then, of course, how many units will be affected. So that's it, members. I hope everyone supports the A2 amended. It's information for us. It does not affect the basic provisions in the bill other than the enactment date, which pushes it out just 1 year. Thank you.
Senator Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Dreheim. You know, having more information is always better. But if you'll be willing to work with me, I think line 1.5, you know, having MHFA kind of work doing stuff into, you know, wages, maybe a different department might work better, and so maybe we can try to work on the language of the amendment going forward.
Senator Graham.
Thank you, and thank you for the comments. Yeah, I mean, if we need to bring in another agency, I know Deed works with prevailing wage a little bit and other agencies, but whatever is appropriate, I think this is a good start if we could adopt this language, and I'm always willing to work with anybody to make it better. But I think information is key. We put a lot of resources into housing, trying to catch up, and we need to make sure we maximize those resources. And if there are problems in the market, members, you know, sexual assaults shouldn't happen, period. And we have rules on that. Wage theft shouldn't happen. Unsafe working conditions shouldn't happen. We have OSHA. So if there are bigger problems here, then we need to address that and talk to those other government entities. So I'm willing to work with anybody, but I recommend we adopt it as drafted. I would be happy to work with anybody on modifying it as it goes through the different committee steps.
Senator Zhang.
Members, you know, I'm just unsure about some of the language and what the impact would be, because I would like to have, you know, this law in effect as soon as possible. People are being exploited. You know, there's worker misclassifications going on. And so maybe we could work on it, and you have my commitment, Senator Dreheim, that I will work with you. There's a couple of stops to go before you know, this makes it through the finish line, and I would like to hold off on the amendment if possible.
Other discussion about the amendment, members? All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
Nay. The motion does not pass. The amendment is not adopted, but has a division. Do we need to have three hands for a division? Seeing three hands. We will do division. Okay, everyone, so all those in favor, raise your hand for aye. Got it. Okay. And all those opposed, raise your hand for no. There being three ayes and four noes, the motion does not pass and the amendment is not adopted. Yeah. Appreciate the commitment to continue to work on the concept. Other discussion to the bill as amended, members? Senator Pott.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. I just want to say a thank you to Senator Hyung for bringing this very important bill forward. Public dollars should never go to contractors and developers who are violating labor laws. Building affordable housing should never come at the expense of wage theft or labor abuse. A few years ago, while I was serving on the city council in Brooklyn Park, we actually had a development that came in that were using subcontractors who had a history of wage theft and labor abuse. And we heard quite a bit about that. But had we not been brought, that was not brought onto our attention, which we did not know until it was, we would not have caught something like that. And this is something that happens quite often here in the state of Minnesota. So we have to make sure that when we do have these developments coming into our communities, that this is something that we look at. Because again, wage theft and labor abuses and the things that we hear, that happens here. So thank you so much, Senator Hyung, for bringing this bill. And I truly support this bill for my own experience with developments like this happening in our communities.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Senator Zhang, for the conversation. Definitely an important one. We want to make sure that there is not abuse, willing abuse. The question I would have is, I see multiple references, probably as early in the bill, I may not have highlighted them all, but one of them, or it makes reference to subcontractors at any tier performing work. The one I'm looking at right offhand here is page 3.8. So a contractor or subcontractor at any tier, can you, in your experience, help to illuminate approximately how many tiers generally are there in these projects?
Senator Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Lucero, for the question. I would imagine, you know, there would be a general contractor, subcontractor, and then they could potentially hire independent contractors beyond that too. But I think what this bill is trying to help target and what the report points to is that some of these problem developers, it's become a business model for them to do, to put in, you know, wage theft, to commit wage theft and to put in worker misclassification into their work model. And that's what the report has found. And so I think several tiers to your question.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, if there are those that are doing to make this, have made illegalities and abuse and exploitation a business model, that absolutely needs to be stopped. 100%. No disagreement. So if there are multiple tiers, as you just said, in your hypothetical that I heard, roughly three tiers, and there could be more, yeah. Could be four or five or more. Then looking at the subsequent language for the penalty, looking at I'm on line 4.6 now. A developer is disqualified from receiving financial assistance from or through the agency for 3 years if any of the developers, contractors, or subcontractors at any tier. So my concern is, Madam Chair and Senator Zhang, is you have the developer who then hires a subcontractor, or I'm sorry, a general contractor, and the general contractor obviously is going to hire a series of subcontractors. And you could be five layers down, far removed from the developer. And to the developer's best effort to avoid exploitation and in good faith efforts to avoid abuse. But five tiers removed, if they do something that does result in exploitation, the penalty in your bill is the developer is disqualified. Do you have concerns that that might be a little strong, as you had in your opening remarks? There is a serious shortage of supply right now of units and housing, that when you disqualify the developer because a subcontractor very far removed in terms of tiers could perform something unbeknownst to the developer.
Senator Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Lucero, for raising that concern. I agree with you to a certain extent, but I think, you know, these developers are coming for public dollars, and I don't think that we want to, you know, worker abuse and exploitation that is occurring, and that's not something that I don't think anybody would want to support. In terms of, you know, having the tier of like subcontractors and so forth, you know, I think we have laws in place now. I think might have been passed recently, where the general contractor is allowed to go after any subcontractors that does indeed fail to, you know, pay the prevailing wage.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, I don't know what other laws there might be, but just looking at the proposal before us, I have concern in terms of the developer being penalized now or disqualified from receiving future financial assistance. And I just want to highlight that again, I think there's a distinction between knowing that they're hiring subcontractors at these lower tiers that are engaging in exploitation. Absolutely needs to be dealt with and penalized and prevented from receiving public dollars, as your bill is addressing. But then there's those scenarios where the developer, despite good faith efforts, has a circumstance where 4, 5, 6 tiers down, a subcontractor far removed from the developer, they engage in a behavior, but your bill is penalizing then the developer. There are scenarios where I envision that are going to have unintended consequences, and oh, we are right at the bottom of the hour. So with that, I just wanted to highlight. I mean, it's a serious issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Zhang.
And you do bring a valid point, and we can follow up with you and have further discussion on that that point.
Senator Pa.
I'm going to make this quick, but I just wanted to address what Senator Lucero was talking about. Just from my own experience from the project I was previously talking about, I truly believe developers absolutely should be penalized if their subcontractors and independent contractors violate these things, because they, when they find out about the violation, they have an obligation to now make sure that they terminate that contract with that subcontractor or independent contractor or whatever. They have remedies that they can take. If they do not take those steps and those remedies, they should definitely be penalized. And so I think that there's many things that developers can do, and it's the developers who are choosing not to do anything despite knowing, and they're not even investigating when there's claims against them. That's where I have an issue with. So I just want to make that quick point. Thanks.
Senator Draham.
Thank you. My question would be, Chair, there isn't a lot of developers in this space. And I'd like to ask the author if he knows how many developers do this type of development in Minnesota.
Senator Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Draham. No, I don't have the number offhand.
Senator Draham.
Thank you. You know, so in our tours and in my tours over the years on various housing projects and meeting with cities all across the state, every corner of the state, I hear the same thing. There's just not enough projects. And now with the way this bill's drafted, I understand what the author is trying to get at, but we're going to chase what few developers we have playing in this space out for 3 years. if a subcontractor of a subcontractor of a subcontractor does something wrong. So I just want to urge members that I think this needs to get worked on, and the way it's drafted, I cannot support it. And I think it needs more work. And whatever we can do to make sure people aren't being taken advantage of, I'm all for it. But I think there needs to be some tougher language in the bill to the knowledge end of the accusations that are going on, that the developer knew or instructed or something along those lines. And then if they knew and they had knowledge of, I'd be happy making it longer than 3 years. But the way it's drafted, I cannot support it. And I appreciate the committee's time.
Senator Zhang, any closing comments before we move to a vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Graham, I look forward to working on it with you because I would very much like to have your vote on this bill. And to the point Senator Lucero raised and what you elaborated on, I think if you look at line 4.8, you know, it's the when they come back for the second round, that's when they are, you know, subject to being disqualified for any future project. And we hope that it would be a collaborative process that's inclusive with, you know, MHFA and when they're awarding out their project. But members, I truly urge your support. I think it's something that's definitely needed. And I would like to thank the testifiers and North Star for the wonderful report that they provided for us.
Brief comment, Senator Lucero?
Yeah, real quick, and I appreciate that. So thank you, Senator Zhang, and thank you, Senator Pa. I do appreciate that. So just as you continue to look at this language, to Senator Pa's point or her comments, the language as drafted, it doesn't include the verbiage of, again, somebody knowing, a developer knowing. That's what's absent. And that's what I think needs to be included to Senator Draheim's point. So thank you.
Thank you, members, for the robust discussion. Thank you, Senator Zhang, for bringing this bill. Certainly, as these exploitations and abuses are happening in Minnesota, we want to eliminate that. And so thank you for your work to move us in that direction. Senator Pa, would you like to make a motion that Senate File 4593, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary?
Yes, I'd like to make that motion.
Thank you. Members, that being the motion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The motion passes, and Senator Zhang, your bill is on its way.
Thank you.
Members, thank you for being concise and thoughtful with your comments today as we conclude at the almost the time that we desired to. A note about next week, we will be meeting on Tuesday and Thursday next week as we are finalizing the plans for any policy package that might come together. Details about that will go out to committee members tomorrow. And that being the end of our agenda, we are adjourned.